Thanks for listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm Madison from the SBDC team, and today we'll be discussing how to sell before you launch. Our guest today is Alex Lavage of Startup Champs, and the discussion will be led by our director, Lynn Chestnut.
Hello, it's Lynn, and I'm glad that you're listening to this podcast, How to Business. Today, I'm very excited to have a good friend of mine and a gentleman who has a lot of experience and knowledge in our subject matter today, Mr. Alex Lavage, who is CEO and founder of Startup Champs. Alex has worked with many Fortune 1000 entrepreneurial clients. Also, formerly, Alex was director of Startup Accelerator Programs for Colab here in Chattanooga, and has continued to lecture and consult internationally on the applications of market research, social psychology, systems thinking, attribution marketing, and sales automation techniques towards securing sales before launching. With all of that, Alex, welcome.
That's it. It's a pleasure to be here, Lynn.
So Alex, let's talk about selling before you launch. Kind of explain pre-sales and why securing pre-sales before launch is so very important.
That's a great question. Let's kick off with why are we doing business in the first place and what's going to make it sustainable? What makes a business successful? Simply put, your business will be successful if you're generating more revenue or more sales than what you're spending. That's it. Now, that should be common sense, but we're in one of the most overcapitalized countries on the planet. In a lot of entrepreneurial circles, that's not a message that we're not sending out. It's how do you go into debt? How do you get investor capital? How do you just find a way to get the money before you even know what you're doing? So pre-sales is a great way of validating that the market is real. And when you look at the data, back in 2019, the SBA came out with a report and they said the failure rate for startups was around 90%. 21% within the first year, 30% in the second year, 50% in the fifth year, and then by the 10th year, it gets even higher. So pre-sales reverses that statistics on its head and says if you're able to secure pre-orders, deposits, letters of intent, and before you launch, you are tremendously more likely to be successful.
Absolutely. Spending the time that I spent in the banking financial world was the old model of let's go borrow money, let's borrow money from our family, let's get investors. All of a sudden, before you even sell your first product, you're in debt, you have so much more expenditures, and you have no revenue. For most people, what you're talking about should be the way that many people look at going, especially when they have a great idea, they're great products. I know we're going to talk about crowdfunding.
Most people don't realize this. There's a lot of debate in the crowdfunding community what the origins are. I like to attribute it back to 1885, when the French gave us the Statue of Liberty, but it wasn't assembled yet. And there were groups of people in New York that were actually trying to go out and get funding from big funders to put up the Statue of Liberty, but they were unsuccessful. They only raised about a third of their goal. It was then that a group said, we're going to publish in the newspaper that we're taking contributions at all levels to put up the Statue of Liberty. And 160,000 contributions later, they were able to raise over the $101,000 that they needed to erect the Statue of Liberty on the pedestal, which today continues to be a symbol for free enterprise and entrepreneurship across America. I love that story. That's the spirit of American entrepreneurship. Don't just rely on one person or a group of funders to give you permission to say, yes, you should do this, or no, that's a bad idea. That's not how American entrepreneurship works. The way entrepreneurship works is to go out to the people and to those who are actually going to be buying the product and to have the market finance the vision, to have the market finance the solution that you're bringing to the table. And if you do that, you'll be much more likely to be successful.
That's a great story, and that's not a story that I knew, but I'm glad to hear that because you're right. That's exactly how we were founded and how this should work. We talk about crowdfunding. We have a lot of clients who will say, I'm going to crowdfund, and they just randomly go out and they go to GoFundMe or Kickstarter or Indiegogo. Talk about some questions that should be asked and things that entrepreneurs should think about before the crowdfund, and then how to determine what platform to use.
Sure. And that's a loaded question. We could devote a whole nother podcast towards just all of the questions that you want to ask before you actually take the leap and do this. starting off with asking yourself one of my favorite questions for all entrepreneurs, and especially in a country where we do have 81% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. And a lot of hopeful entrepreneurs may think, hey, the way for me to move forward in life is just to launch a business. Maybe, but let's step back a moment and ask the most important question, where are you really at in life right now? Both in terms of your financial capital, both in terms of your free time, in terms of your credibility in your community, in your industry, in your profession. What are some of your core competencies? Meaning, what are you really good at? What comes naturally to you that does not come naturally to other people? And who are you connected with? Do you have a lot of relationships in place that can help enable you to take a vision to the next level? Working with a coach, working with a mentor, coming to TSBDC, going through that process is a really good first step to get an honest assessment of where you are. From there, you want to break down who is your target market. And you don't want to just say, well, I'm targeting men, or I'm targeting women, or I'm targeting people that are large businesses with more than $5 million in revenue. I'm not interested in that. Before you get into a successful crowdfunding campaign, you want to ask, how can I shift an assumption into a fact that I really understand not only how to segment who actually faces this problem that I'm trying to solve, or who will value the value that I'm trying to offer them in a very logical way that will then resonate with them coming up to me and saying, I love this idea, take my money. And that's not just compartmentalizing, but also understanding and breaking down how to sell. Because how we sell to an individual is completely different than how we may sell to a business, completely different than how we're going to sell to the public sector, so on and so forth.
Exactly. We talk a lot about understanding who your target is. I had a client who had a very high-end product to sell, and this person said that their market in Chattanooga was 400,000 people. And I went, so basically everyone within the metro Chattanooga is your client? No, because two things. This particular product, a lot of people love the product, but not everybody can afford the product, number one. Number two, my father loved this product. But my father was a very, very stingy individual who would only pay very small amounts of money for this product, and he wasn't buying it. This is not your market. And by the time we worked with her, we realized her market was far smaller than that. But it also allowed her to take her marketing budget to hone in on those people. You're right. Who are these people who really are interested in what I have to sell and solve the problem? Solving the problem that I need solved, that you can do so.
For anyone that's listening, get on Google right now and type in total addressable market and understand what that definition is. And a total addressable market is the total size of the market that is going to be the market that you're going to be in. Underneath that total addressable market, there's another concept called serviceable addressable market. And that's the market that you have a capability to sell to over time. But that doesn't mean that you're ever going to completely address all of the needs in the serviceable addressable market. There's a third layer underneath that, which is your target market. Those are the people or the companies or the personas where it makes sense to actually go after. So this is one of the most common mistakes that entrepreneurs make, is they'll go up and they'll say, well, the total addressable market of Industry X is $50 million and all I need is 1%. Most professional business people, bankers, investors, they laugh at such a statement because they say, if you're going after a total addressable market, then you don't know who you're going after. Your target market is a part of your serviceable addressable market, is a part of your total addressable market. And the more specific you can focus on who that is, the easier the sales cycle process is going to be over the long term.
What else in our talking about crowdfunding and the things we want to address prior to, what are some other areas that people should be thinking about and asking themselves?
So there's a lot to think through. There's a great book that I would recommend if you really want to delve deep into this, by Derek Miller, who has a book called Six Figure Crowdfunding. That's a really good resource. That's going to go into a lot more than what we can cover in this podcast. But I'd like to start off with just the fact that I do a lot of consulting in this area. People often ask, how much should I budget to actually do the crowdfunding campaign? That's a really important question, and that you have some resources to work with before you go launch a crowdfunding campaign. And that's going to be whether it's a third-party website like a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo or some of the others that we can talk about later, or if you're going to actually do something custom. The best way to think about that, though, is to think about in your industry, what percentage of gross revenue is typically allocated towards marketing? And that varies from industry to industry. In some markets, for instance, like around manufacturing, it's actually very small. It's around 8%. Software is a little bit higher. It averages around 15%, whereas if you get into packaged consumer goods, you get 25%, 35%, sometimes more. So you want to be mindful of what those averages are. Then you need to also then let the math do the talking. If your goal is to say, I really want to get $1 million in pre-orders or pre-sales for this product that I'm just so certain is the best thing since sliced bread, then you need to be prepared to spend as much as $250,000 to actually go and do the work and to get the marketing in such a way that it will really resonate with people that can help you reach that goal. As opposed to if it's software, well then you don't need to spend as much, but you still need to fund a process to make sure you understand who these people are, why they buy what they buy, how to communicate with them, and then to actually put together a program to go up to them one-on-one to get them to buy in, to say, yes, if you build this according to spec, I will give you money.
That's a great point in this, because we have so many people who just believe they can throw something up on a Kickstarter, Indiegogo, whatever, and if you build it, they will come, as we talked about in one of our other podcasts. If you put it out there, the money will come to you, and that's just not the case. I can't even imagine how many pages of crowdfunding on each site there are, and how you differentiate yourself, and how you, again, like you talked about, how you reach the right people in this. Any other words on that before we move on to the next thing?
Yeah, I think ultimately one of the things I want to keep reinforcing in this podcast, if there's one key takeaway, I mean, there are going to be a few key takeaways, but one of them is to make sure, to quote the famous saying from Sun Tzu, The Art of War, the war is won before it's fought. I like to say that your crowdfunding campaign needs to be successful before it's launched. You really need to make sure that you're guaranteeing, and nothing's ever 100% certain. So I like to say, take it from zero to roughly 85% confidence that by the time you launch anything, no matter what platform it is, that within the first 48 to 72 hours, you will have reached your goal. So make sure that goal is realistic. Make sure that you've got enough buy-in from people, either verbally, in writing, through whatever means makes you confident that people are going to put in that money, that you can reach that goal, because then that will allow you to scope and shape a narrative that you can then share with the world that will trigger excitement and specifically get people in public relations and in the media to open their eyes and say, wow, we've got something hot going on here. These guys just came out of nowhere. They raised their goal in less than a few days, and the world needs to know about this.
Fantastic. We talked about platforms a little bit, so let's talk a little bit more. What are different platforms you recommend? And I know in some of our conversations, platforms, some of them are very industry specific. If you wouldn't mind, just delve into that.
Yeah, so let's start with that fundamental question, where are you at, is really important. And in some cases, if someone's not starting with a lot of money, and I'm just gonna throw out a number like $10,000, maybe the best thing is that if you really can't wrap your head around how to make additional money to fund this on your own, I understand. I know what it's like to feel really passionate about something. You're like, you know, I don't need to go get a third or fourth job to make this work. I just need money in my pocket. That's called donation-based financing. So there are platforms out there like GoFundMe where you can just say, you know what, I'm not offering any equity. This is not a loan. This is just a donation-based. If I've got friends and family that just want to help me go out and get some research that may validate that there's a market out there so I can go do my passion, I would be grateful. And that's it. So you're managing expectations. You're managing expectations. You're telling people, don't expect anything out of this. This is just a donation. That's okay. Be honest about where you're at before you move forward. Now, there's also equity crowdfunding. That's been a hot area out there. So there are websites like WeFunder.com, StartEngine.com, lots of these different websites who actually give up equity in the company. and that's how you're able to raise money. My issue with that is, well, okay, but they don't always do a good job of publishing. Do they have a database of real world customers lined up that are ready to buy the product? I go through those as a part of my job, and I see a lot of hype. I see a lot of excitement. I see a lot of great ideas. But the way I'm trained is, I was like, okay, well, a vision is not a fact. You have a lot of interesting hypotheses here, but you're selling equity in a company, and I don't always know unless I dig deeper just how real the market demand is. So it's a little bit like gambling. So then that shifts over to real crowdfunding. So you take, for instance, Kickstarter as a very popular one. Since its founding, it's funded roughly 202,000 projects, $6 billion pledged. That's fairly impressive. But you want to break that down and figure out what exactly is the story there, which I would encourage everyone to do before getting on to Kickstarter, to segment what to realistically expect. Because specifically, if you're really trying to launch a business from scratch on Kickstarter, the reality is you're like, yeah, they've raised a lot of money. Well over 2/5 out of all campaigns do reach their goal. But only 1.6% of those are actually able to fund a business model out of the gate because they're raising more than $100,000. Kickstarter is a great platform, depending on what it is you're trying to do. It works very well for creative projects. But like what we were saying earlier, depending on the industry you're in, you want to look at what are other platforms out there that are tailored towards your industry that may be able to help.
I think one of the biggest takeaways so far is under-promise and over-deliver on what your product or what the expectation is, no matter what you're looking at. Again, look at different platforms based on that industry. There may be one for software, there may be one for consumer goods, things like that. What else?
I would say also here in Chattanooga, we've got some inspiring examples of people who have already done this. Mad Priest Coffee, Velo Coffee, for instance, these are two examples of coffee companies, which is a very, very competitive space. But what they were able to do was to go out and sell the equivalent of gift cards. And they said, hey, don't just support this and that's it, but actually buy a gift card that is same as cash and then keep coming back to the store, get to try the coffee, you fall in love with it, and then you're building a relationship and you're getting a lifelong customer because they're willing to say, we're willing to do this because we know you're going to love our coffee. And it's great coffee. I go there often. Other examples is just down the street. There's a restaurant, it's a vegan restaurant called A Cashew. They did the same thing. They said, we want to expand. How are we going to raise the money? Well, they got on Kickstarter and they said, we're going to sell $50, $100 gift cards. People come in to the restaurant, they use their gift card, makes them feel special. They're a part of supporting the growth for that restaurant. So there are enough real world examples in our own backyard where all you have to do is go to the search engine on Kickstarter and just type in location Chattanooga, and then you can filter it to rank how much money has been raised from most amount to least amount, and just go through and study some of those examples. Because they're at all different levels. And there's one I just actually came across a few months ago, Biggie Design. They're developing all kinds of custom-made products. Like they have one that's like a titanium handheld screwdriver that you can take with you with its own screw heads in it. They've raised over $150,000 and they've got like a few days left, which is just fantastic. To, as you may know, like when I first moved to Chattanooga, I worked with what in 2014 was called one of the top 10 manufacturing startups in the world over at Variable. We got started on Kickstarter. I was involved in those campaigns where we were able to sell our handheld sensor products online. And it wasn't enough to justify the business model, but it was enough to reinforce that, hey, there's excitement and there's interest out there, which we were then able to go up to investors and raise millions of dollars in capital to help take that business to the next level. That would be a really important message, is anyone listening that's interested in this, is to don't just go up to a variety of advisors and agencies here in town and so forth, because they have a lot of great resources, but go straight to the source. Don't be afraid to find people in our own backyard that have already done it. Do your homework. Like, don't just go up to them and ask them, hey, how did you do this? Because that's not respecting their time. But if you have a specific question, this is a very supportive community where people do want to help, and we want to help everyone succeed.
Yeah, small businesses are like children. We birth them, we grow them, and we love to talk about them like we like to talk about our children. So people are responsible. I know that Richard Rett with Sierra Madres here in the BDC for a while did a lot of talks about it. I think Richard's probably one of the most successful crowd funders that Chattanooga's seen in a long, long time. And he was always glad to talk about his successes and sort of how they did that.
I visited with Richard briefly. I was down in Puerto Rico not too long ago. 1.6 million total in pre-sales through Sierra Madre Research, which is a variety. You can type them into Google, Sierra Madre, M-A-D-R-E, Research. They've got a variety of different outdoor and camping products. Really inspiring. So yeah, we do have examples of local and small businesses doing it here, either for new business or pre-existing business. And it's a much more effective way of having the market fund your growth or having the market or your community support your launch, rather than going up to a bank and getting a loan or going up to investors and giving up equity in your company before you have anything to show for it.
Great. We've talked about platforms. Now what? Once you find a platform, what are the components of a successful marketing campaign?
One of the key things that I think is often overlooked is, do you have the right market insights? And I don't want to get too technical with this, but it's really important you understand your demographics. And I'm sorry to use big words here, but this is just what we call it. There's demographics, psychographics, and understanding the psychology of why people buy. There are lots of resources you can get online. If anyone is interested in going through those, you can email me at alex@startupchamps.co or reach out to TSBDC. I do a lot of collaboration with TSBDC here in Chattanooga, and we are more than happy to guide you to some of the online resources. There's survey systems, there's Tuluma, there's AYTM.com, there's a bunch of them where you can cost effectively get real market insights to understand what is the data you need to create a successful marketing campaign so that you are more likely to be successful through this process. So that's number one, is to really get a strong sense of who you're talking to. Now, once you get that figured out, you understand your demographics, meaning you know your age, your gender, household income, geography, all of those factors, psychographics, it might be this research that comes out might show that people are really into country music or they're really into going to Starbucks every day. You don't know, but these are all little insights that a creative mind can look at this data and put together a message and a vision that resonates with people. Then from there, you want to create a lot of content. You're going to need to create social media. You're going to need to create video. You're going to need a website. You're going to need to be able to tell your story. And a part of that story, you need to essentially address five really important questions. And the first one is, why should people care? Why should people care about your project? Is this because it's about supporting you? Right? Like, right. I think sometimes we see that in entrepreneurship, especially around small business. Well, I'm going to go out and do my dream, and this is all about me. No, if you're going into a business thinking it's all about you, you're probably not going to be successful. If you're in business, it's all about your customer. It's all about your client. It's all about what other people need. You are a servant leader helping to create a product or a service or a solution for other people. So it's actually not about you first, it's about others. You've got to pitch this in terms of other people's rational self-interest. Why should people care? Are you helping them save time? Are you helping them save money? Are you helping them make money? Or are you just creating a really cool experience and you're making something more meaningful? Or are you doing all of the four? The second is, what's your story? We are drawn to stories. We are storytelling machines, all of us. So to be able to break down what is it that motivates you and why am I going to feel emotionally connected to you for doing this? Are you overcoming significant odds in life? Was there a tragedy that happened that led you to want to launch this business? Are you somehow creating this because you too have this problem in your own life? That's something that you want to tell your audience. You also want to really convince people that you can deliver and manage on those expectations. Now, that's one of the biggest issues in crowdfunding right now, is there is a long list of products that have been launched that never got delivered. And people are wary. I mean, this used to be a really hot thing. Like, I think Kickstarter got started before 2010. Back then, you could just get on there and go raise money. It was a lot easier. Now, people are a lot more cautious. So you've really got to go above and beyond to be able to guarantee this is organized and we can manage expectations. We will deliver on the date we say we're going to deliver, and you don't have to worry about that. So that needs to be a part of your story. And then you need to essentially then say, as you raise this money, how is it going to be used? And to break down that budget, transparency is king. get people to trust you because you're showing where the money is going to go. And then last but not least is to specify not only how people can help, which is typically going to be putting down some money, but then also why. What are they getting out of it? What is the value proposition? And making that crystal, crystal clear. And for a lot of small businesses, usually what that means is a gift card. I would add to that, there is a campaign I remember seeing up in Knoxville, just north of us. There was a group of college kids that I visited with a year and a half ago, and they created a coupon book for a locally owned dry cleaning business with multiple franchises all over the city and across the region. They sold these coupon books for $50. In that coupon book were coupons, $50 same as cash. So anyone could pay $50 and get basically $50 same as cash. So when they go get their dry cleaning, it's treated the same as cash. And those salespeople were getting $25 for each coupon book sold. So these were college kids making like an extra $200 a day, which is a lot of money when you're in your 20s. They said it sold like hotcakes because you're just trading money for money with people who are already getting that anyway. But here's the kicker. On top of that, there was a coupon book about half an inch thick of 5% off, 10% off, 15% off, 2-for-1 specials, all kinds of things. They were able to convince the dry cleaning business, hey, this is really smart because what you're doing is you're building brand loyalty. Because people are coming in, they're getting this exceptional service, and then they're going to keep coming back because this sits in their car and they realize, oh my gosh, I've got all these coupons I need to keep using. Everyone won. It was a win-win-win business proposition. And that's what you want to look for with stuff like this, is how can you provide something, to your point, Lynn, under promises, over delivers. You've just got value on value on value on another layer of value so that people really feel like they're being treated well and that their time and their money is ultimately being respected.
Exactly. You were talking about story. I want to go back to that for just a second. We have so many incredible stories in our area of different, and you and I have worked with some of the same entrepreneurs. We're all about local companies. We get our local coffee from folks around us here and other things, but just great stories. I know that Sarah's working with a client who told her that she has the opportunity to be the first person in her family to come out of poverty. She has the opportunity to affect her family for generations to come. That's an amazing story. And she's doing it very methodically. She's not going out and borrowing money. These are all things. She's bootstrapping. She's doing a lot of things that we love to see. She has this great mission. And if you talk about these things, we want to support that. We want to give them. We have a finite number of dollars, but we're going to use those dollars. We're going to spend those dollars with people like that. So story and telling why them, but not making it about them. It's not always easy for me, and I'm an only child. Anything else on that before we get back?
I want to just share another story with the audience here. I think it sort of ties in, and that is, so you've got two guys that are friends sitting at a bar. One tells the other, hey, Gary, super exciting. We just got a bunch of money to go do a full feature film. And Gary says, wow, that's amazing. Tell me more. And he says, well, we've got Lamborghinis and we've got the studio, we've got the expensive film equipment, and we've got all these high name celebrities that are going to be in the film, and you've got to be a part of it. And he says, this sounds like the most amazing thing ever. Can you show with me the script? And that's the punchline. Ultimately, we get so obsessed with, I just need the resources, I need the money, I need the capital. But ultimately, you've got to make sure that you've written the story in your head and you've gotten help writing that script for how things are going to unfold if it's going to be successful. And I say with that because a lot of times people get into crowdfunding thinking that, oh, there could be this potential for organic growth. It's going to hit it big because the media is going to pick it up and they're just going to blow it up. And next thing I know, I was only trying to raise $100,000. I end up raising $1 million and it's just, it all magically happens. Well, folks, I hate to break it to you, but the reality is that in most cases, not all, organic growth happens by design. Viral marketing happens by design. It's a little bit like placing the dominoes on the table and you kind of know how they're all going to trigger each other before you hit the first one. That's usually how these things work. And that's a really, really important piece to get across, is that as you've got this marketing package for your crowdfunding campaign, you've got the website, you've got the video, you've got the social media, you've got a story, you've got the product, you've got the sketches, you've got all this stuff to get people excited. The next is going to be how to amplify and scale that message, either in the local press or in the state or national media. In order to do that, you've got to get their buy-in first. make sure that they are aware of what you're going to do in some cases before you do it. Or better yet, is you know how to communicate with them and you've got help with a PR professional. Folks, a lot of the Kickstarter campaigns that you see out there that raise more than $1 million usually have help with an agency. It's not just an entrepreneur that goes out there and just stumbles across something lucky. I mean, sometimes that happens, but luck is not a strategy. The best strategy is to work with professionals who have been there, done that. And there are some great PR firms I can recommend if there's interest in this, but ultimately to make sure that as you reach that goal, again, within 48 to 72 hours upon launching, that you have a list of people, you know exactly who you're going to go to, and you also understand the algorithm and the equation for how getting a bulk of, I would say, C-level bloggers and social media influencers triggers the B-level, and then that triggers the A-level, and then next thing you know, everybody knows about what you're doing.
How about now, let's talk about Startup Champs. How is what you do at Startup Champs different? We always talk about differentiating oneself. Talk about Startup Champs, kind of how you got to this and how you do things a little differently.
Well, essentially my story, as you know, and most people in Chattanooga know, I've been around entrepreneurship here in East Tennessee for 10 years, and I continue to be one of its strongest advocates and supporters. But it's saddened me, and it's almost been traumatizing seeing how many entrepreneurs in our own local community have not been able to make it work, that have had to hit the reset button, that have gone through bankruptcy or divorce. In other cases, the outcomes have been much worse. Startup Champs came out of not only I wanted to learn better and essentially get paid to learn how to get pre-sales before launching new businesses, but I also am doing it out of service to so many people and so many entrepreneurs that I've seen, including family members who I'm actually lost because of failed entrepreneurial activities, that to really not only to show through my results, but also to advocate through a narrative. Entrepreneurship does not have to be as complicated or as stressful as we often make it. Entrepreneurship does not have to be as stressful or as complicated as we often make it. If you follow a process, which is what I guide all my clients through, it becomes a lot easier. I'm a little bit different than a crowdfunding platform in that I'm not a platform. I'm an agency of people, trusted professionals around the world, working with clients around the world, mostly in software, manufacturing. We're now getting into real estate, a few other spin-off industries, where we guide them through a list of questions. It's less focus on the technology and more on making sure that they're getting the right insights to make data-driven decisions every step of the way. Like we were talking about, starting where you're at. Are you really ready to do this? Step two, is the market really ready for this vision? Step three is then having the market come in and collaborate with you to create a design or to validate a design, to validate the need that your product or your service that you're presenting is actually really novel and useful. Then going into marketing experimentation, you're able to validate that your product and your price and the way you're going to promote this is going to be effective. So you're not going through endless trials of burning through cash, trying to figure out how do we sell this and making your sales team feel bad because they're not getting the results that you want. And then last but not least is using real automation through technology. That could be everything from automating emails to what have you. I'm a big fan of using what look like handwritten notes, because a lot of the companies that I work with, I mean, these are mostly high net worth individuals to large companies or most of my clients. And sometimes they're working on ideas that they don't want to broadcast to the world just yet. They really want to keep this stuff private. It's a very sophisticated piece of hardware for the commercial scuba industry or the water utility industry or what have you. And they're very focused on, hey, we just want to get validation from key people that the product need here is real. But we don't want to broadcast it just yet, because in a lot of cases, like for instance with software, it's hard to create a patent or intellectual property protection around software unless you've got really novel technology supporting it. What I'm able to do is to say, hey client, let's go through these series of questions, and to sort of keep the campaign quiet so it doesn't hit the mass market, because it's not really a B2C brand in a lot of cases. And that can be tremendously valuable. And then a part of my service is ultimately, how do I justify the invoices? I sell revenue. When I go up to a client, we say, well, hey, we've put together a budget and we've put together $25,000, $50,000 to do this crowdfunding campaign, and it resulted in $500,000 to $1 million in sales or more. And then from there, it's a lot easier to get additional financing as one may need it in order to continue to move that business forward in a way that you don't have to give up too much equity in the business, or you don't have to put too much on the line out of your own personal savings or from friends and family, or giving up equity in the company, which ultimately then just adds stress to the business, and that's no fun.
We're going to get to some final takeaways. Before we do that, people that would want to connect with you, again, I know you said earlier, but give them your email address for those that might want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, so my email address is alex@startupchamps.co. If you have a couple of questions, I'm always happy to direct you in the right direction. Beyond the first few minutes, I do charge $120 an hour minimum. Usually that onboarding is around $1,200 for about 10 hours worth of time to make sure it's a good fit. After that, if it's not a good fit, I will let you know, because I really do not like billing for time as a consultant. There's a lot of cynicism and animosity out there around all consultants in general because they bill for time, and I just don't buy into that model at all. I like to bill for revenue. But that first initial step can oftentimes, that has value in and of itself, because I've been able to help people realize they're not ready to launch a business. And I'd much rather them spend a few $100 to come to that assessment than go through their life savings realizing that they were not ready. Just be prepared for that. But if we do engage together, there are going to be ultimately two different paths. So what I do with some clients is I will sit down with them, we'll go through a series of these questions, we'll put together what's known as a Gantt chart. And a Gantt chart is just a very sophisticated way of seeing what are the tasks that need to get done and by when. So between that and a checklist, from there, all I am is just an accountability coach. I'm just checking in with clients once a month and saying, how are things going? What are the bottlenecks? Can I do anything to help? I know a lot of people. I know a lot of agencies. I've been in this space for a lot of time. I can make really interesting introductions for a lot of clients and help them guide in the right direction. Or in other cases, that they're like, you know what? I don't have the time. I don't want to do it. I just want to write a check and actually see the sales figures at the end of it. Great, we can do that too. I'm going to subcontract out a variety of different professionals and or agencies that have proven track records, which I've spent over 10 years filtering through and figuring out who's really good at what they do. And then we'll act as a subcontractor, charge a small fee on top of that. But then ultimately, we're acting as a sales agency with a commission structure for locking in and securing those sales. Those are two options for how to engage with Startup Champs. But in a lot of cases, especially for local small businesses, unless you've been in the industry for, usually like most of my clients are over the age of 45, they've been in an industry for 10 or 20 years, they've usually got 6-7 figures net worth added, or if it's a company, they're a large 8-figure, 9-figure, 10-figure revenue and sales. So the money is not an issue, they just want to do things correctly. But if you're not coming from that place, I'm still happy to guide you in the right direction, give you some books to read, but usually the best advice is, how can we get you to a point where you've got real money in your pocket first, and then we're able to help you think about launching a company second? Because what I'm dead set against is setting people up for a path where success is not likely, and it's just going to add to a lot of unnecessary anxiety, stress, and fatigue.
Let's do some final key takeaways that you have, and then I've got one final question for you.
Well, I think one of the first one is going back to the very beginning. You are more likely to succeed as a business if you've got more revenue than you have expenses. That's not complicated. The goal is, if you're going to launch something, how do we get you to break even as quickly as possible? And how do you set that up for success ahead of time? Usually, success comes before you launch. Get sales before you launch. That is how you are able to validate that you are more likely to be successful before you launch. It's that simple. Make sure that, as such, that when you're also doing that, that you're getting the right market insights, so that as you continue to grow, as you continue to scale, you know who you're talking to, how to communicate with them, and you've also validated that they've got money to spend. That's really important stuff. And for that to overlap with real financial models, which, Lynn, I mean, you're really great at, and the whole crew at TSBDC, go talk to TSBDC. It's a free resource. I've known these folks for years, and they're amazing. They're the best in town. They've got real metrics. They know their stuff. They've got access to not just statewide, but national resources that can help make this process a little bit easier. go talk to them and work with Lynn to really break down specifically how you can, ahead of time, before you even launch, create a narrative through numbers, through what your pro formas are going to look like, your balance sheet, your income statement, your statement of cash flows. How are the numbers going to justify you even exploring doing this in the first place? And to validate that, ultimately, again, because you've got the right market insights and feedback from the market. And then ultimately, just never forget that ultimately, the more you apply scientific principles towards building a business, the more likely you are to be successful. All that means is just every step of the way, ask yourself, is this an assumption or is it a fact?
Exactly. One of my favorite quotes that I heard some years ago, my daughter, she cringes every time I tell her she wants to save the world. I tell to the entrepreneurs that I work with, you can have the greatest moral imperative, but you still have to do math.
Sure.
At the end of the day, it is a science-based, it's a math-based equation. We end our podcast every time with one question for you. Give entrepreneurs, whether they're startups or they're existing businesses, one piece of advice you would give them. I know that's a lot to ask, but what's the one thing you would say to them, Alex, especially in today's world?
I would say on a personal level, this is more about running your own life like a business before thinking about how you can make a better business or launch a business. I know for me personally, I mean, ever since I was in my 20s, I've lived a fairly minimalist lifestyle. I was very inspired by a book called The Millionaire Next Door by Thomas Stanley. I was surprised because we're in our 20s, like we don't know anything. We think we know everything, but we don't know anything. And we're seeing people in fancy Lamborghinis and Ferraris, and the media perpetuates how you're supposed to live if you are rich. And then you look at the data and you're like, oh, I actually know. We've got a lot of amazing first generation self-made millionaires. They're completely unsuspecting. The best message I have to small business owners and entrepreneurs is don't get caught up in show business. Focus on the business. Don't try to impress people with money you don't have so that ultimately you think that you're trying to convince them of something when they don't really care. It just doesn't matter. The more you live your life like a business where you also are living significantly beneath your means, it doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice, but it just means that like you're living beneath your means so that no matter what life throws at you, you can keep moving forward. And I just think that is a message that especially in America where we see consumer debt increasing, we see people thinking, oh, I've got to live these fancy lifestyles, like I have to have this and I have to have that. No, actually you don't. Just keep it simple. And maybe when you're at Warren Buffett's level of wealth, you can upgrade from a $60,000 Lincoln to an $80,000 one. Some people disagree with me and that's fine. But I think especially in entrepreneurship, if you're working with a large employer, you can afford to, maybe you get caught up in like, oh, I've got to have a certain lifestyle and I'm maxing out on everything. But if you're going to be an entrepreneur or a solopreneur or a small business owner, less is more, folks. Just keep it as simple as you can so that no matter what life throws at you, you've always got enough money to save, to invest, and to have rainy day fund on rainy day fund on rainy day fund so that no matter what life throws at you, you're going to be prepared.
Exactly. I appreciate that. I will leave you guys with this. Two things. Number one, to your point, the average millionaire in the United States drives a four-year-old vehicle that has no debt on it. That's a fact. I'm going to steal a quote from one of my favorite financial people, Dave Ramsey, and I think it's so good. And it is, live like no one else so you can live like no one else.
There you go.
I think that's the key takeaway.
That's a good one.
Alex, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks
for
your time. This has been fantastic. Folks, thank you so much for listening. We hope you will subscribe to our series. We have a lot of great information out there. Also, schedule some time with us. Come talk to us. We're happy to work with you. We love what we do, and we'll see you real soon.
Thanks for listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you like today's episode, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast and to take a moment and rate it on the mainstream podcast platforms. The How to Business podcast is produced by Pod Topics in collaboration with the SBDC of Chattanooga. To learn more about Pod Topics, visit podtopics.com.